When I set up my Twitter account 18 months ago or so, I had to describe myself in 140 characters or less. This is what I came up with. Glass half full life lover, social justice arc bender, Unitarian Universalist, wife of a wife, librarian at teachingbooks.net. Then 5 months ago, I looked at that description of myself and I thought, I'm a glass half full life lover? Where did I go? It was a hard spring. The loved ones around me were struggling. If my brother-in-law wasn't in the hospital, my dad was. If my daughter wasn't grieving a relationship that ended with loved ones moving, I was. The society around me was struggling. If I wasn't attending to the sorrow and outrage of the killing of Tony Robinson, I felt like I should have been. It was the 50th anniversary of the death of James Reeb, who died at the hands of a white supremacist system. And sometimes the past and the present seemed too much like mirrors. And my own self was struggling. Physically, I had sprained my ankle and I couldn't exercise the way I was used to. And most recently, my friend of 20 years confided in me with her desire to end her own life. It was a lot. Our worship services this summer have an overarching theme of hopes and dreams. Certainly, I've dreamt of and hoped for happiness, especially lately. I think my inquiry into what happiness is came about because I wasn't really feeling happiness the way I thought I should, the way I wanted to, the way I thought I had in the past. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one who's ever faced this roadblock. Just to be clear, as a side note, I can't really speak to clinical depression within today's reflections. Not because it's not an important topic, but I just don't have enough direct experience of or expertise with clinical depression. What little I've come to surmise about big D depression is that it is a beast of its own. It sideswipes me when it shows up uninvited at my front door. It is isolating and ugly. It is scary and paralyzing. It is overwhelming, and I think it deserves its own inquiry, one that is beyond today's reflections. So turning towards happiness, what is it? How does it happen? What does it feel like? Well, here's what I've uncovered so far, and I was telling someone today, it feels like it's just the tip of the iceberg. Number one, happiness is connected to unhappiness or sadness. There's no getting around these interrelationships. Our musical recordings point this out. Bobby McFerrin acknowledges that in every life we have some trouble. And during the offertory, we'll be listening to Pharrell Williams sing about bad news, talking about this and that. This pairing of happiness and unhappiness is a part of life. Indeed, 19th century Lebanese poet Khalil Gibran, that Lila so beautifully read, reminds us of this interconnection between joy and sorrow, saying that the self-same well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. How else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? Even the contemporary poet Naomi Shihab Nye starts her poem with that which contrasts with happiness. She writes, "With sadness, there is something to rub against, a wound to tend with lotion and cloth. When the world falls in around you, you have pieces to pick up, something to hold in your hands, like ticket stubs or change." Sometimes it feels like our society doesn't want to admit this connection between sadness and happiness. You don't see ads saying, this hot product will make you feel it all. And we don't see billboards of people silently contemplating their full range of their emotional experiences. No, we are bombarded with smiling faces and a laugh track. Does it ever feel to you like you're on the outside of the happiness looking in? It does to me. Somehow I missed the inside joke. And then there's the pressure to look on the outside like I get the joke and I'm happy anyway. Here's something else I've noticed in the texts supporting today's service. Happiness is airy. Nye writes, happiness floats. It doesn't need you to hold it down. It doesn't need anything. Happiness lands on the roof of the next house singing and disappears when it wants to. I can relate to how happiness has a life of its own. It can't be controlled. It's fleeting. It's moving. It can't be held down. Nye continues, since there is no place large enough to contain so much happiness, you shrug, you raise your hands, and it flows out of you into everything you touch. Imagine that. Everything we touch being blessed with our happiness. Sometimes I like to imagine that I can assign my happiness my favorite color, and then imagine that color expanding as my circle of influence expands, overlapping and mixing with the colors of other people's happiness. The song by Williams that we will hear during the offertory also speaks to this airiness. Listen for the lyrics that say, I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space with the air. He also references a room without a roof. Imagine happiness so big, so airy, that it cannot stay inside a building. We may be in this room together, but this roof just expands up and out of the way as our happiness sails. So we know that happiness is connected to and interrelated with sadness, and we know that happiness floats like walking on air. But how do we get it? How do we feel it? Well, there's a documentary from several years ago called, you guessed it, Happy, yeah. It unpacked some of that for me and explained more about this field of positive psychology. Apparently, our happiness is made up of three categories. The first is our genetic set point. About 50% of our happiness is just our given nature. I guess that's where my identity as someone who sees glasses as half full rather than half empty comes in. Then there's the part of happiness that comes from our social status. Professor of psychology Sonia Labormoisky explains this social status aspect this way. Life circumstances, such as where we live, whether we're married, whether we're physically attractive, whether we're wealthy or healthy, have very little bearing on our well-being, only 10%. Because human beings adapt very quickly to situations. This means that the remaining 40% of our happiness can actually be impacted by intentionally changing our thoughts and behavior. In her 2008 book entitled The How of Happiness, A Scientific Approach to Getting the Life You Want, Professor Labormoisky outlines 12 scientifically tested activities that people can use to increase their level of happiness. Turns out that we don't have to do all 12. We just do the ones that resonate for us. So much like I had the young people raise their hands or stomp their feet or snap their fingers or nod their heads during the message for all ages, feel free to give some indication if one of these activities resonates for you personally. Have any of these worked for you in the past? Number one, expressing gratitude. Counting your blessings for what you have or conveying your gratitude and appreciation to one or more individuals whom you've never properly thanked. Okay, so that's all expressing gratitude. So each of these has like a short word and then a long sentence after it. So I'll do both, and then we can say woohoo. Okay. Okay. Number two, the topic is cultivating optimism, and the explanation says keeping a journal in which you imagine and write about the best possible future for yourself, or practicing to look at the bright side of every situation. Okay. Number three, avoiding overthinking and social comparison. Using strategies such as distraction to cut down on how often you dwell on your problems and compare yourself to others. Number four, practicing acts of kindness, doing good things for others, whether friends or strangers, either directly or anonymously, either spontaneously or planned. Number five, nurturing social relationships, picking a relationship in need of strengthening and investing time and energy in healing, cultivating, affirming, and enjoying it. Number six, developing strategies for coping, practicing ways to endure or surmount a recent stress, hardship, or trauma. Number seven, learning to forgive, keeping a journal or writing a letter in which you work on letting go of anger and resentment toward one or more individuals who have hurt or wronged you. Number eight, increasing flow experiences. Increasing the number of experiences at home and work in which you, quote, lose yourself, which are challenging and absorbing. And so an example of that, I came across this article in Parade magazine last month called 50 Shades of Happy, and it's people are coloring. And that's why on the front of your order of service, you'll see something you can color, and somebody already has. Yay. And so they say that this is a way to get into the flow, and to be in another zone, and to find happiness that way. Okay, number nine, savoring life's joys, paying close attention, taking delight, and replaying life's momentary pleasures and wonders through thinking, writing, drawing, or sharing with another. Number 10, committing to your goals, picking one, two, or three significant goals that are meaningful to you and devoting time and effort to pursuing them. Number 11, practicing religion and spirituality, becoming more involved in your church, temple, or mosque, or reading and pondering spiritually themed books. And number 12, taking care of your body, engaging in physical activity, meditating, and smiling and laughing. Oh, what a nice variety of activities to choose from. So the question comes, how does this relate to Unitarian Universalism? Well, it seems to me that our choices around happiness relate to the fourth principle, which is found on the back of your order of service, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Given that we can impact up to 40% of our happiness, it seems worthwhile to at least consider engaging in one or more of the above 12 activities. But which one feels most true to you? Which ones have proved to be meaningful for you in the past? Well, that's between you and yourself. Only you can search for that truth and meaning. Thankfully, the third principle, also on the back of your order of service, reminds us that we are not alone. Here at James Reeb UU Congregation, we affirm and promote the acceptance of one another, and we encourage spiritual growth within our congregation. You do not walk alone in this endeavor, and you are loved exactly as you are. So in the weeks to come, may you revel in both your joys and sorrows. May you experience the expansive airiness of happiness. May you find your flow, take care of your body, practice acts of kindness, and or try other experiments with happiness. May you clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. May you clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Blessed be.